Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Comedy Concepts with your host, Nancy Lombardo.
And a wonderfully warm good morning. Everyone listening today? We have a very interesting guest. I had a book come across my path, and it was very interesting in a day and age when women are taking more control of their lives. Little gem came across here in a lovely blue color called Breathing Blue, giving my life spirit and spirit to my life by Kathleen O'Dwyer. And she's going to be our guest today. And, I found this music and I thought it was so appropriate to play underneath it while I do a little intro for her. So I'm going to do it now. It's by Amanda Trees. And I'm going to play it while I talk a little bit about our upcoming guest. Okay, here we go. All right. Now, Kathleen O'Dwyer, after more than 20 years of writing for corporations at the age of 26, Kathleen O'Dwyer threw her comfortable Chicago life up in the air and moved to Arizona. Kathleen, you like that little spiritual music going on in the background?
That was lovely. Thank you. I appreciated that.
Yeah, I just had to find the right piece of music to go with your book, because when I was reading it, I was like, and I kept thinking, should I be breathing more? Because
yeah,
now let's go back. Let's start the back. I know it's a lot of fun, Comedy Concepts, and we do books and everything from comedy. But I did find a lot of humor in your book, surprisingly. I don't know if you did, because from my perspective, it was a lot of things I have to be afraid of now, like scorpions. But
yes,
every now and then, like, what are you doing, Nancy? Kathleen said to look before you reach in anything. And so let's begin at the beginning. Well, not so far at the beginning, but you're a Chicagoan, go Bears. And so you grew up in Chicago.
I did.
At an early age, were you any aspirations to live in the wilderness or write?
You know, funny thing, I get a little embarrassed telling people this story, but when I was in high school, a friend of mine and I, we were fans of Star Trek. I guess we were like the original Trekkies, and we were so enamored with that show that we wrote our own episodes every single day.
That's amazing.
I know, it was crazy, and we would write these episodes and leave cliffhangers for the other one to figure out, and we would do this every day, and I don't know what happened to those episodes. They probably were burned. I hope they were burned, because I'm sure they were pretty awful. But that was my first taste of writing, and we really threw ourselves into it. And then when I got into the corporate world, writing was one of my skills and something that I was valued for. So writing has always been a part of my life. Little funny story, my first marriage, we were receiving wedding gifts before the actual date. And we received a set of pewter candlesticks from a couple that was a friend of my mother-in-law. And so these were people that I didn't know. And I immediately sat down and wrote a thank you card to them and sent it off before the wedding. And at the wedding, they showed up and they said that they had thought that they would skip the wedding because they had been going to too many weddings. But after they received my card, which they thought was beautifully written, they decided to come. And that really stuck with me on the importance of writing and how words really make a difference.
Well, I think also in that, Kathleen, is not just the importance of writing, because in your book you do have a very emotional connection to everyone you seem to meet. Just emotionally connecting through your writing, I think, is another way that to express that. And that I'm still reeling from the Star Trek episodes, because and then in my head I thought, how interesting that she wrote these Star Trek episodes only to move to a place that looked like every set of Star Trek. But
I didn't think of that, but you're right.
You know, with hills and mountains and, you know, actually looking like another planet, that you happen to move to someplace like that. You were
truly
prolific in your early writings as to where you would end up. So it was very interesting there. So you decide, what was the turning point that made you decide enough with the corporate world?
You know, it had been leading up for quite some time. My disenchantment, my sitting in my little cubicle and knowing that there had to be something else out there, the routine, even though I was busy and I had a job that had a lot of different responsibilities and every day would be a little different, it still came down to a routine and it still felt robotic to me. And I thought, no, this is not what life is about. And when our company was sold and I knew I would be out of a job, I immediately had another job lined up, but it was doing the exact same thing. And the closer it got to that time, I thought, oh, I just can't do this anymore. You know, and I was 56 years old, and I thought, if I don't do this now, if I don't make a change now, then when? And my thoughts kept turning to Aravaipa. The reason being, the year before, I had gone there on a spiritual retreat, and I had my experience there was very intense. The connection with nature was strong, and I just decided, go for it. Send this email to the owner of the ranch. Put it out there. The worst he can do is say no. And to my surprise, he said, yes, come on out. I'll let you live here on the ranch. I'll let you take care of things for me. I need the help, and you can write. And the feeling that came up in me was that I'm supposed to do this. I am truly supposed to do this. And it was almost like I had no choice. And I felt that if I didn't get out there and try this, then I would always regret it. And
well, that was a very, very unusually brave decision, where you were a little ahead of your time, and that a lot of people, they're in their 50s and they go, oh, this is it, and they just acquiesce. And I always think of it as the second part of your life.
And, you know, that's true. I think nowadays, in this time, that people, you know, in their 50s, 60s, you know, we're young. You know, we live longer lives. We are healthy. We are active. I mean, I get out and I hike for hours, and I'm interested in life. And it's a time in my life when, you know, I don't have as many responsibilities pulling on me. My children are grown. They're out of the house. They're off my payroll. And
I think that's the interesting part of your book. I think that the point you're trying to get out or to share is that you can change. The change
you
is
can.
In your hands. It's in your hands. And even if you take the smallest step towards that change, I believe in that. If people have always told me they wanted to sing, I go, take a class. Oh, I've always wanted to do comedy. Take a class. It's the first step. Just take a step. Don't regret. As Edith Piaf said, je ne regrette rien, but regret nothing. Take that step. And I think your book has a lot to do with that, and that small change. And so you were in an accident, I see, a bike accident.
Yes, I was in a bicycle accident, you know, and that was one of the changes that I had been going through. You know, I wanted to get healthy and fit, during my marriage, I was depressed and I was carrying around an extra 60 pounds as a result of that. And so I was getting my body in shape. And one of those ways was bicycle riding. And I had gone on what they called the Boulevard Bike Tour with the Chicagoland Bike Federation. And I was very excited. I had my helmet and I had my, you know, shoes and I had my new, spanking new bike. Well, the bolt wasn't quite tightened right. And while I was out on the course, the bolt fell out, the bike frame came apart, and I crashed. Had to be hauled away in an ambulance. And I sat there in the emergency room with two black eyes, my nose was as big as a sausage, my elbow was all wrecked up, and my thumb was broken, my belly was swollen from where the handlebar hit me, and I'm laying there, and I remember the nurse came by, and she saw me, and I just was crying, and she said, it's okay, I know you're in pain, and I said, no, that's not the pain that's causing me to cry. I realized then that it was the pain of loneliness, the pain of not doing the things that I wanted to do. It was really a life-changing moment. And the pain of feeling foolish that I could think that I could be out there riding and keeping up with the youngsters. You know?
Oh, wow. That's
but
a lot.
It was a lot, but I realized that, and then the following year, I still was working to, you know, bring my body back to health, and that was when I turned to massage therapy, and I thought, I can do this, and so I signed up for school, and I went to school at night, every night for a year, to become a massage therapist. And then that morphed into exploring energy work and all other alternate forms of healing. And as part of that, creative writing came to the forefront. I had been writing
through that. But also, too, just to get back a little bit, through the massage therapy, because they have said, massage releases a lot of things.
It does. And
through your massage, do you think that was part of your healing process and just that, not only physically but mentally?
It absolutely was. I believe that one way to heal yourself is to reach out to others and give them help.
Okay. That's great. So you didn't just learn the ordinary massage. You learned Reiki. Am I saying it right? The intense.
Yes, Reiki, which is an energy healing. And
again,
so,
that's what I'm thinking. Somewhere in there, released to the brain,
mm-hmm.
that powerful force to say you have to do now. I'm going to do something else. Now here's another challenge. And I'm
exactly.
Gonna, so tell us about this because I found it. I know it's hard to believe because it's your book and you. It's very serious on a lot of levels because it's a very healing spiritual book. But I did find the idea of a city girl going all the way out to Arizona kind of funny and your exploration. So let's take back and going to Breathing Blue. You're out there. You get to Arizona. Okay.
Right.
Now, your first thoughts when you've been there once before, but your first thoughts when you go, this is going to be my life from now on.
Yeah, I had talked with David on the phone, and he said I could have there was a single wide trailer, and those could be my living quarters. And when I pulled up onto the ranch, drove through the creek for the first time, I completely drove past it because it was so dilapidated looking from the outside. I thought it was a storage shed. And when the realization hit me that, oh, no, that's going to be your home. I was like, oh my goodness, what did I do? But I just thought, okay, I'm here. I can do this. I can do this. I part of me felt that after my divorce, I had let go of so many things. And this was another letting go. Just saying, okay, I don't have the pretty condo in Chicago anymore. This is it. Make the best of it. And
you did an emotional jump from a plane, basically, going from Chicago to Arizona.
I did. And, you know, it was...
Going from the city to that kind of environment, what was that like? Going from the there's no stores nearby, there's no...
I walked the grounds that very first day and was just overwhelmed with the beauty of the place. The mountains, the sky, the creek, the water flowing by. It was just very idyllic. And it felt that way for, you know, a long time. And then the floodwaters came in. And
which I thought that the floodwaters, in my opinion, not a writer, but in my opinion,
yeah.
I just thought they were metaphors for here's another challenge.
Here's another challenge.
I don't want to give too much away, but it got pretty scary in parts of the book. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, it was.
And when you were saving the people and trying to get the baby out, and I was like, ah! Oh, no.
Yeah.
I was reading, faster. I was going, what? What happens?
I know. And you know what it did for me? It made me realize that, oh, I can do this. I came here not knowing a darn thing about managing a ranch, had never seen a rattlesnake in my life, had no experience with scorpions, didn't know anything about all these animals that were out there, didn't know how to read the creek and know if it was safe to cross or not.
I know you were terrified to go out in the middle of the night.
I was terrified to go out in the middle of the night. So many creatures are nocturnal. And a friend of mine had told me, he said, well, you know, if you're afraid, just take your flashlight and shine it in the woods and you'll see the eyes shine. And I thought, oh, no.
Oh, great.
I didn't want to do that. She said to me, well, I'll come over with my black light at night and we'll, you know, run it over the walls and then you'll see the scorpions. And you'll be able to see them and get rid of them. And I said, oh, no, I don't want to know where they are. You know?
My first thing is just tell me what the predator of the scorpion is. That's all I want to know. What's the predator? tell me about this. Do you have a passage, maybe, a passage or two that you could pick out for us from your book?
I'm sorry, repeat that. Do I have a
passage? A passage you might read from your book?
Oh, sure.
So people get a feel for the flavor. Like I've never been so more afraid. I think I've seen a scorpion once in my life. I'm more afraid now than ever of scorpions.
You know what? I've been stung 4 times and I survived, so it's okay.
Well, that was the plus side. All right, so find us a passage you like.
Okay. Okay, this passage that I found, it's 3 paragraphs, and it was a time when I was feeling a little down. It was a financial challenge living at the ranch, and it was the day that my hair dryer cracked out on me, and it wasn't working anymore. And so I wrote about it. On the sofa, I sat down and put my hands up to my face and sobbed. What is going on with me? I had $14.07 in my checking account, $60 in savings, and David was 10 days late paying me this month because the last guests at the ranch left without paying their bill, which happens more often than it should. My blow dryer crapped out this morning. I have to wait until the next trip to town to get a new one because I don't want to squander a half tank of gas on a lousy $20 blow dryer. Follow your bliss. What they don't tell you is how hard it is to do. Following your bliss means living on rice and beans and whatever you can coax out of your garden. Following your bliss means telling David, I'm not worried about the money. Pay me when you can, which was a big fat lie. Following your bliss means working your butt off every day, wearing the same old ratty shoes with holes that are getting bigger all the time. Following your bliss means finding a scorpion in your kitchen sink in the middle of January. Following your bliss means crying your eyes out because you can't laugh. I was not depressed. I was following my bliss. I simply haven't reached it yet. So I got up after this crying jag, washed my face, pulled my still wet hair up into a limp ponytail, tied on my ratty shoes, and went outside to shovel compost. I would put a big smile on when David arrived because I couldn't go back. I have to move forward because in the end, I was grateful that I had a place to live and to write and to work. Because yesterday I took a morning hike and the weather was beautiful. Because the only desk I want to sit at is a writing desk. Because this life was important to me and I refused to exist unaware because although I hadn't reached my bliss yet, it was out there. And this was what I had to do to find it.
Wow, I love that. You picked the most perfect one. I love that.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's the most perfect one. You should do the. You have a good speaking voice. You should do this as an audio, as well.
Oh,
you should do
your
audio book. It's very good.
Thank you.
And that was nice. Yeah, because and I think it speaks to so many people, not just women, but to so many people on many levels of just in this economic age when you're. Oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do?
Right.
And think that you and you kind of point out you don't have to stay. In the same rut. You don't have to just be depressed because you can't work at the same job you want to work that you've been working at, that maybe you got to try something new and just the book kind of gives people hope. There is change and you've done it and it's that they can do it too. Where can I get this book, by the way?
Well, this book is available on Amazon. It's available in hardcover, softcover, and it's also available in Kindle format. So that's probably the easiest way, the most familiar way for people to get it. It's also, there's a link on my blog, www.breathofblue.com, that will take you to Amazon. So that's the easiest way to get the book.
And it's great. And it's also, I would say, I would give this book to a friend who's going through a hard time. You know, and I think that's it's good because there's a lot of positive things in it, and you do manage to find the humor in it. I love that your cat. Tell me about
oh.
the cat.
I have so many people who said after they've read the book, they said, "Do you still have Miss Kitty?" And I said, "Oh yes." She and I went through it together. So, and. I think she was disappointed to leave Aravaipa. She truly loved it out there, and she was my role model. You know, she took it on, and she had the confidence to do what she needed to do, and she kept me going as well. So.
Oh, the chat room, I have to tell you, my chat room is so nice. I have a chat room up to Cyanide. You're outside of Amsterdam is listening. Thank you, Cyanide. And we have George Bettinger, another radio show is listening from the Mom and Pop Shop. George Bettinger, Hot Mix 106. He'll be on today at 4 p.m. Just thought I'd give him a little plug there, George. And he posted, you can also go to www.breathofblue.com.
Yes.
Thank you, George. That's very, very nice of you. Yeah, the cat was just, I like that you were afraid to put the cat out there because of all the animals that might get the cat.
Yeah, I know. She's a tough little thing.
But that she was there with you through a lot of the scary parts of the book, too.
She was. And, you know, it was interesting. I think that she truly was my role model. You know, I think that she was tough and she was fearless and it gave me like, well, you know, she can do it. I mean, she's only 11 pounds. You know?
Well, a lot of breath of blue, a lot of it, giving my life to spirit and spirit to my life was interesting because you did bring up the spirit of things while you were out there. The dragonfly,
yes.
For instance, when you saw the dragonfly.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, that I think that is a great healing thing. To connect with nature. Currently, I run earth journaling workshops at the local arboretum, and I take people out there. I take groups of people and lead them through exercises to connect with nature. When you are out there and you sit with nature and you realize that it's a mirror for you, and you can see yourself in it. It brings up all of these emotions that you probably don't even know that you had. And it allows you to get them up acknowledge them, and release them.
And take yourself out of inertia. Take yourself out of not doing anything. And instead of being depressed, just the way you go, sometimes just separate. Get away from people.
Exactly.
Get away and just see what life is really about. That
right.
It's not just a, people can be a negative force as well. And you separate and you see, it's just me and you world. It's just me and
yeah.
you. And
yeah.
that's what you did in your book. You really, mm-hmm. the long walks you would take, the soaking in, mm-hmm. the seeing the spirituality in everything living, mm-hmm. the signs. I guess you have a close relationship with the Native American thoughts.
Yes. Yeah,
I can see that as well.
I do. I still do that today. Every day I get myself up and out. And I live at the base of the Superstition Mountains, and I have access to the desert very easily. And I get up and I get out there, and I walk out into the desert every morning. And it just rejuvenates me. To see the mountains, to see it against the sky, to see right now we're seeing the desert wildflowers popping up. It brings me such hope. It brings me such happiness. And it lets me know that, you know, we're all related. What I do affects the desert. What happens in the desert affects me. It's back to that big circle.
And it's you can find this book at www.breathofblue.com and to find out more. And I'm so sorry, I should have mentioned your workshops. These are fascinating as well. Could you just quickly tell us, can they go to your site for these? Where can they find out about your workshops?
Well, I do them at Wisconsin Arboretum, and then I will soon be doing them also at the Phoenix Desert Botanical Garden. And so they are on the websites for those, the Boyce Thompson Arboretum. So
are they on breathofblue.com?
I don't have them, but you know what? I can post them on there.
All right, that would be great, because I think once people listen to the show, they're going to want to find out more information about that. And it's just so great what you've done here, and you can get the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, mm-hmm. I believe.
Yes, it's also on Barnes & Noble online. Yes.
And I have a feeling you're going to be getting calls to be a guest speaker, so I would start your voice, and because you're very well spoken, and I think just listening to you read, I could see you touring, just talking about this book and taking it on the road and just sharing it, because one more time, it's Breathing Blue, Giving My Life to Spirit and Spirit to My Life. But it's not just, I wouldn't call it a self-help book. I just a spiritual memoir journey, I think it's just, and it's a great positive thing if you're stuck and you're feeling inert to read, to read about what Kathleen did and how she changed her life and said, yes, just change it. Downscale
right.
everything. You just downscaled your life and went back to the bottom and came back up again.
Yeah, and great. Well, I appreciate that. I'm going tonight. I have a book signing at Anasazi Bookstore in Phoenix, so I'm looking forward to that as well, and hoping to be able to read a little bit from the book and meet with a lot of new people there.
It's all terrific. I highly recommend it, everybody. Breathing Blue. Get it for a friend. If you have a friend who's a little down, get it. It's a great read. It's very entertaining, and like I said, I did find humor in it, but also just your connection and your willingness to share this experience with everyone. Thank you. Can you believe it's been a half hour?
I can't.
How fast it goes. How fast it goes. And I just have to mention before I say, stay on, I just have to mention a couple of things. You could see me tomorrow night, March 5th. I'll be performing at Moons Over Miami at Otto's Shrunken Head and Tiki Bar, so those of you who know it. And a shout-out to George Bettinger, who's been in the chat room promoting you, of the Mom and Pop Shop, 106 Hot Mix, and Betty Jo Tucker, Movie Attic Headquarters, every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Kathleen O'Dwyer, you've been a wonderful guest. And
well,
I wish you well with everything and all your endeavors and your second book, and I look forward to your world tours. Everyone.
Oh, thank you.
Breathing Blue, Giving My Life to Spirit and Spirit to My Life by Kathleen O'Dwyer. Go get it now. Thank you, Kathleen, and I'm going to play you play you off with some ethereal music. Okay, here we go with Amanda Trees, Bells of My Heart. Thank you for being a guest today, Kathleen. I love your reading voice. It's terrific.
Oh, thank you.
All right, don't forget breathingblue.com. Find the book there, Barnes & Noble and Amazon. Terrific guest today. I really enjoyed it. It's a great book. Good night.